As Europe's energy transition accelerates, the demands on distribution grids are reaching unprecedented levels. For countries like the Netherlands and Germany, this has been especially true, with DSOs grappling with connection bottlenecks, capacity limits, and the challenge of integrating distributed energy resources. But how do the two compare, and how do we make Europe's distribution grids truly resilient, flexible, and future-ready? To help unpack that, I'm joined by two members of the EU DSO entity, Oliver France, Vice President of European Regulation at E.ON, and Alco de Long, Strategic Advisor for the Energy Sector at Stedin. I'm Yusuf Latif, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Oliver, Alco, grid resilience, is this just a buzzword, or is this something that we can truly build and measure? Oliver, let's start with you.
Thank you, and thank you for having me, of course. I wouldn't say that it is a buzzword only, because we have, I believe, at least three issues where the resilience of the grid needs to be strengthened. I would start maybe with the most obvious one, that is cybersecurity. That is obvious, in my opinion, as if we digitize the system and there's a lot more data flowing around, then of course we need to make sure that the data that we are receiving is the true data and that it has not been manipulated in any way. We probably also need to make sure that nobody is listening in, because just by listening in, you might generate information that we don't want in anybody else's hands. So cybersecurity, I believe, is a must. Sadly enough, we also have, I believe, a question of physical resilience in two dimensions. One, sadly enough, again, is actually hybrid warfare, if you want. So the question, especially in CE countries, do we need higher fences? Do we need drone protection? Do we need stuff like that? Because we know that there is attacks on energy infrastructure in Ukraine, and we probably need to prepare for that to a certain extent. And then we have climate change. And climate change is a reality in Europe. There has been a major flood, for instance, in parts of Germany 2 summers ago, where we lost a whole subsystem, if you want, because the substations were swimming away, literally. So we need to harden the grid, depending on where you are, either for more heat, more rain, more drought, maybe some of that at the same time. And all three are going to cost money, but they are, if you want, insurance, understood as not paying it might be even more dangerous than now taking the hit in terms of higher revenues that might be needed to finance that.
There's a lot to consider there, Alco. I don't know if you have anything to add.
Oh, it's very helpful to be in a panel with Oliver, because he can name the most important things and based on his experience, etc. So, no, I think it's not a buzzword either. I mean, and we used to have more resilient grids, so they used to be there. And they will become there, I think. But we do have to think really seriously about how to overlap the intermittent period, in a sense, especially in the Netherlands, where we have a lot of congestion, of course, in our grids.
We will come back to the Dutch grid and its congestion issues, but I also want to talk a bit first, perhaps, about the German grid. The ambitions to decarbonize are quite significant, but the bottlenecks persist. Mm. Oliver, where are the real constraints here?
Well, the constraint, I believe, in Germany is that, lucky enough, we had a first wave of RES, in especially solar, going on the grid, and that created, if you want, a bit of a reserve. And now we're at the moment in time where at least two or three things again happen at the same time. So we're selling out, if you want, the reserve that we have in low voltage, because yet again, another person in the street decides that they want to go on their own transition path, and that somewhere will overflow the substation, and then or we have a voltage problem, which is probably the first problem that appears on some of the feeders. Then secondly, there is, I believe, two new kids on the block that we didn't have in our plans 18 months ago, or maybe 24, and that is data centers, and that is battery storage systems. Both of them are entering either on high voltage or medium voltage, where you might find a situation whereby co-locating with a wind farm or so, we still have some capacity. But if you look close to large towns, for instance, FLAPD, in our case, Frankfurt, there is not much you can do, not much left you can do. And of course, we're looking to flexible connection agreements. We're looking at all kinds of grid enhancing technology to do what we can. But there is going to be an intermittent period, like Akka was saying, where yeah, we will need patience, I believe.
I'm happy you brought up the idea of new sources of demand coming onto the grid, like data centers. And I find it quite interesting, Alco, you mentioned congestion. I know that in the Netherlands, the Dutch grid has been congested for quite some time. It's been a hassle for a while. How did the system reach that point? And what reforms or tools have shown potential in freeing up capacity?
Yeah, that is, in a sense, a sensitive question, of course, especially in the Netherlands, because we are really feeling the pain of this congestion situation. So at the moment, there are a lot of businesses in certain areas in the Netherlands on the waiting list. They cannot connect. They have to really adapt to a new reality. Nobody was expecting this, in a sense, from the ordinary citizen perspective. And how did this? How did we get so far? I always like to watch these kind of series on TV, like air crash investigation or other catastrophic events that happened. And what you mostly learn, I think, is that it's never one factor. It's almost every time when such a disaster happens, there are multiple factors in place. The pilot is a little bit sick, it's a little bit foggy, etc. I think this applies to a large extent for the Dutch situation as well. There is a factor in the regulatory framework in not really maybe stimulating investments in a sense. But okay, we all were in this situation, so we all participated in this. I think specifically for the Netherlands, we also accelerated in phasing out natural gas from Groningen, which is quite easy for your listeners to pronounce, maybe Groningen. We have, of course, natural gas there, but we have also small earthquakes, which are, well, of course, if you live there, very impactful. So we try to reduce gas very fast and electrify very fast as well. Also giving a lot of subsidies. So we had I think maybe one of the largest surges in Europe in charging points and solar panels. So this also didn't really help. Maybe combining it with ambitious climate goals, of course. Yeah, we ended up in this situation. And I think last part of your question was, how are we dealing with this? So we are indeed trying to loosen our framework in a sense, because we are used to first come, first serve. In the Netherlands, we are really looking now at different procedures. So if we have maybe another funny Dutch word, congestieverzachters, these are connections that are waiting in the line and they can solve congestions in certain areas. So maybe storage, or if we see that they can solve congestion and they are at place number 10, for example, it would be a waste to keep them at 10, because if you connect them already, you might also connect maybe 7 others who also would have to wait if you didn't connect number 10 to the grid. So I think that's a good measure, but then we enter a gray area also, because we are also looking in our framework at connection requests that serve important national interest or common interest, like hospitals, for example. And earlier today, I mentioned that in one, I think it was even in one of the court situations, someone said, okay, but data centers, they are maybe only used for clips showing cats doing crazy things. But that's, of course, not true. I mean, all the data of the hospitals is also going through these data centers. So it's quite a difficult gray area to change on that part. But I think looking at these congestion solvers is a good step forward. In Dutch, we say nood breekt wet, in a sense. So if there's an urgency, you maybe have to break the existing framework just to get things moving.
You mentioned there's clearly a lot to unpack there, and almost like a perfect storm of all these different factors happening at the same time. Earthquakes, very, very interesting. You may have already somewhat answered this, but in terms of making grid investment decisions in light of all of this happening, where does digitalization and data, how does that influence the decisions made in a situation of intense congestion?
Yeah, we used to have a model in the Netherlands, some kind of benchmarking between the bigger DSOs. So they were compared to each other. So it was favorable to not spend too much, to not overinvest, which is, of course, a good thing. We are now looking at a different investment model, regulatory model, like a cost plus model in a sense. So we are giving the benefit, we are given the benefit of the doubt to explain what kind of investments are needed, and then best guess in a sense on investment, they are will be checked every year. And we really have to explain if we're investing more or less than we have said we would. So it's not that we can do whatever we want, but the model is changing to making it more favorable to investing in the grid. And I think it's a good thing to do, I think, from our NRA, ACM in the Netherlands. So we are trying to change the system indeed in real time.
It's interesting that you talk about changing the system, because the system is changing as we go, right? So it's about being on top of that. Oliver, I want to go back to the situation in Germany for a bit. Electrification is picking up pace. EVs, heat pumps, clean tech assets are accelerating, I've seen. Can grid modernization keep pace? And what role would something like flexibility markets play in preventing capacity shortfalls?
So first of all, yes, it is actually happening. We have a surge in especially BESS, as I had already mentioned. I believe in that case, there is a lot of speculation going on because people who don't even have the right to use the land still apply for the connection and stuff like that. And we need to be able to do something about it. The regulator has stopped short of actually going for a first-ready, first-serve model. But I would suggest that it is a good idea not to process any kind of request where I don't have the signal. Yes, I either own the land or I have a right to use it, because then it's just, it's just trying to figure out where some capacity might be. Having said that, in terms of data and digitization and grid enhancing technologies, all three together, we must probably use any lever that we can use, but the importance or working of the lever is different. So my prime example always is we have one grid in the north of Germany, in Schleswig-Holstein, which is a state that has the sea on both sides, where they use or will be using dynamic land rating for 100% of their high voltage grid in 2026. So they're going to finish the project next year. Mm. Now you might conjecture from that, as if you were a politician, that is the solution. And it is not, for two reasons. For one, if you go further north, Denmark, same situation, sea on both sides, it wouldn't work. Why? Because Denmark has no overhead lines, so no wind cooling effect. Cooling might still be an option for the cables in the ground, but it's a totally different story. Also, our next DSO in Germany, who has the sea only in the north, doesn't use it as much. And why? Because that is the former GDR grid, and they still have masts that are built according to a measure that the GDR code resource optimized, which is funny language if you want for light and small. And if it is a very low pylon, then you don't have that much room to maneuver in terms of optimization. And the smallest one in the line always will be your limit. So it is a very, very individual game. And where we need to improve as an industry, I believe, is in having the confidence that if it has been working in a different company, in a different country, even in Europe, and I'm very similar to that DSO, then I should probably look into that technology because it might help me as well. Mm-hmm. And that is, there's a balance to be found. And maybe also regulators need to stimulate cooperation between DSOs much more than they have done in the past. I know that there are some good examples on Dutch cooperation between the large ones, but in Germany, that is still, I would say, the exemption.
On those examples, I don't know if there's anything you'd like to add, Alco.
Well, I take the opportunity to mention the IES Europa team, which is really the Europe team of the bigger DSOs. I'm one of these persons participating in this Europe team. So indeed, we are taking the benefits of participating with each other in these kind of associations. And I think there's a good example also from DSO entity side, where we together with NSOE are now launching a website on exchanging grid hosting capacity maps, capacity information from in Germany, and making it really easier for project developers to understand at least capacity information. So we call it a Capacitypedia. We're explaining how to read all this kind of capacity information, trying to share good practices, creating a pushing effect for everyone. And we think this is really the best way forward, instead of creating more mandatory rules, because then you're also closing this space for innovative concepts and learning from each other. But you might even be creating extra administrative burdens for system operators who are already quite busy. So I think that's a really positive example that we are working on at the moment from DSO entity side.
I like that word, capacity. Capacitypedia?
Capacitypedia.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
I haven't invented it, I have to be honest.
Oh, no.
I wish I had.
Well, thank you for bringing it up. I think in terms of something that we can look to both in Germany and in the Netherlands is the increasing use of flexibility as a resource. And I know that there are certain mechanisms that are being tapped in order to try and open up space via consumer flexibility. And I was wondering to ask, when it comes to unlocking this flexibility from consumers, is there one who's perhaps ahead of the other, whether Germany with its market design or Netherlands with its data-driven coordination?
I'm not sure whether there is actually somebody ahead of each other, but what is true, I believe, is that the German regulator has taken the decision to, at least in low voltage, opt for a let's say, non-market model at the beginning, or rules-based, is probably the wording in Brussels now, where if you have certain installations coming to your house, you're more or less obliged to bring them into the mechanism. On the other hand, the DSOs pay a rather high price for that, because we are no longer allowed legally to even deny a connection in low voltage, because the idea is you can always go back to that mechanism, control the assets, and therefore you have capacity. Which is a bit funny again, because it is a curative measure if you want, and that's usually last resort, but we will have to use it quite regularly. As a company, we're also trying to build a flexibility scheme on top of that, which would be a bit like New South Wales, I believe, does. So we would tell the retailers like a maximum band of performance that any grid asset area can do, and would more or less ask them to voluntarily keep within that band. And if you think about that in a more game theoretical kind of way, then you would come to the conclusion that if the retailer was pivotal for this region, that he probably must react to that signal, because otherwise there will be interference with his customers, certainly, with others as well, but with this retailer's customers, certainly, because he is pivotal. So that's really an experiment. But German regulation has taken the decision, we go rules-based first. And that is probably easier than to develop markets at the outset. On the other hand, there's also maybe a bit of a path dependence, which then will create conflict with European law somewhere down the line, I would suggest, at least.
Yeah, thinking about the Netherlands, I'm thinking about two concepts in a sense. Of course, first one is GoPax. I think you know this flexibility platform that we have provided for by system operators, which we are improving all the time, but we still, I think it has a lot of advantages, because we as system operators are really in control in a sense, so we can make sure that if we solve congestion in one area, we are not creating congestion in a nearby area for another DSO, for example. So we have this coordination function, but we still want to see the market more evolving, so we are still looking for more flexibility. So that's one of the questions in the Netherlands. We are also trying to open up GoPax with an API, so that other platforms might be able to connect to our platform, so that we might even open up the market even more for flexibility. But this is still one of the questions. I don't know how this is going in Germany, if you are really satisfied, if you see the growth of these flexible assets or...
No, I don't think that we're satisfied. And in our case, I believe that the main problem, or where the most resources are actually going to right now, is redispatch, where the DSOs have an active role to play. So it is not only that the TSO will ask them to help him in his tasks and jobs, it is also their own merit, which means that, again, you need to build systems, you need to understand what is happening. And again, an example from our company concretely now is that we are at least pondering the use of AI in prognosing what is going to happen the next day. And that actually improves the prognosis. And of course, the target is always to minimize the redispatch so that people can actually deliver the energy to the market that they want. Because if I had to describe our role in a prosumer world as best as possible, then I would suggest that it is our job to provide the consumer with a chance to get the energy that they are making or the flexibility that they're creating to the next best market for that. And that might be the wholesale, that might be a regional, that might even be a local thing, but it's not for me to decide. It's rather my job to make it happen. And of course the DSO director's job much more than mine, because my role is an advocacy one. But that is also the overlap between the redispatch, the flexibility. There's a lot of things that we probably need to figure out going forward, whether you want to keep these apart or whether they grow together. The gate closures in the market, also the on the TSO level, then the reserve energy amounts that they're asking, and we need to make sure, at least I believe that's true for everybody, and probably also the same issue in the Netherlands, that everything that is really there is only sold once, or at least when it's called upon, it's only called upon by one party, because if everybody calls on the same asset, it might luckily have the effect on everything that it needs to, but if it doesn't, then we might be in deep trouble.
Yeah, we've seen it with batteries. I don't know if you've seen it in Germany as well, that especially home batteries, of course, they work on certain logarithms and they tend to reload themselves, of course, when electricity prices are quite low. But they tend to do this all at the same time. So these kind of developments in our grid are, were difficult. So we are also seeking grid-friendly storage in a sense. How can we create this? How can we really understand each other's business models in a sense? I don't know what the experiences are on batteries in that sense in Germany.
I don't think that we have that experience yet, because the batteries are only coming online now. But what I can tell you, or what I was thinking about immediately, is that we had progressed beyond that point, because there were in Germany, of course, in the past, a lot of overnight heat charges. So people who were heating with electricity, yeah, but they were charging overnight. And there is, of course, a right to recharge in the day, which you also need to do if it's rather cold outside. And we always had ramps, so not everybody was doing it at the same time, because in a non-digitized way, if you want, we were trying to bring some coordination to the thing, so that we had four groups and one had the ramp at the beginning and the other at the end and so on, so that we could flatten out the thing. And we will need, in a probably much more economic way, to come to similar situations and solutions, because the worst nightmare, if you want, is also from a system perspective, I believe, is that somebody switches off, I'm exaggerating now, but like 5 million cars like that.
yes.
Or the batteries to those.
Exaggeration. Yes. Well, thank you so much, both of you. I'm just a bit conscious of time. And before we round off, is there any other closing remarks from either of you that you'd like to share?
Well, what I'm personally intrigued by is the zooming out question, in a sense, that we indeed call this an intermittent period. Is all flexibility indeed going to stay more or less because the system is getting more volatile because of wind and solar, of course? Or will we see maybe in the future a situation where the grid is more resilient and that the business models force a lot of flexibility will be worse, and we will get to the older situation of having a very resilient grid that can cope with everything almost?
Now, in zooming out, I'm going to quote a TSO colleague who said to me once, well, if I run 15 scenarios and there is one line that shows up as needed in every of those 15, then I'm pretty sure that I should do that line. And I believe we need to find these, and we need to be able to do these first. And then again, this has something to do with the connection queues and the first come, first serve, or not first come, first serve. And then if I do a little advertisement, because we're both working for DSO Entity, I would really call on every DSO in Europe to join that club, because it is our voice towards the Commission in the debate in Brussels, and we really need to play that card nicely and well and intelligently to get our voices heard and to make our points, because policymakers look for solutions and transmission always looks easier to them.
Yep. So, and we can be a large part of the solution. I think that's really our
Indeed.
our understanding of the problem, we I think we have more or less the same goal. We want to have a working grid for everyone, of course. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a lovely space.
Yeah, I was trying to make some kind of positive.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you both so much for joining us and sharing your insights.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
For more insights, join the Inlet community.